Our Untangled Minds by CUSM is for informational purposes only and does not constitute professional medical or psychological advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment. Please make sure if you do have any questions or concerns that are medical or psychological in nature, that you seek out a physician or qualified mental health provider for further help. Furthermore, the information, viewpoints, or opinions expressed in this podcast are solely the views of the individuals that are involved. They do not represent absolute fact and are subject to change at any point in time. CUSM does not accept responsibility for these views. Lastly, the names and details of any medical stories shared in this episode have been edited for privacy.
What is global health? So many medical students I've talked to have been excited about global health as a fun international trip that they get to take with some medicine thrown in. But how can we ensure that good intentions or desire to help don't lead to harmful actions in global health? How do we even know when harm is being done? The field of global health that we know of today originally comes from topical medicine. Keeping foreign officers healthy was necessary in order to continue exploiting indigenous populations for their resources. Because of this, the field of tropical medicine and research emerged to focus specifically on tropical diseases, largely endemic to the geographies that were being colonized, like malaria and dengue. Then, in the aftermath of World War II and the increase in foreign aid from wealthier nations to those that were less wealthy, tropical medicine began evolving into international medicine. Today, global health has emerged from international medicine and is defined as a field of study, research, and practice that places a priority on achieving equity and health for all people, with health being a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease. Another alternative definition defines global health as a concept fabricated by developed countries to explain what is regular practice in developing nations. Global health overall involves multiple disciplines within and beyond health sciences, is a synthesis of population-based prevention with individual-level clinical care, promotes interdisciplinary collaboration, and emphasizes transnational health issues and determinants. Our guest today is Dr. Jessica Everett, the Global Medical Director of Child and Family Health International, or CFHI. CFHI is dedicated to transformative global health education programs, research and thought leadership, emphasizing community leadership, global citizenship, and ethical engagement. CFHI is an NGO in special consultative status with the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations. Dr. Jessica Everett has also previously served as CFHI Executive Director from 2013 to 2021. In her current role of Global Medical Director, she oversees CFHI safety and risk management, thought leadership, publications, and advocacy. She has co-authored dozens of articles and texts focused on best practices of students and faculty engagement in global health. Dr. Everett is faculty in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, where she instructs in global health and community-based underserved care and helps develop as well as completed the Global Health Clinical Scholars Residency track. Our conversation was recorded at the 2024 Consortium of Universities in Global Health Conference in Los Angeles. So we'll just jump right in. Tell me about your global health journey. How did you know it was something you wanted in a career, and kind of how have you expanded your knowledge about global health?
Sure. When I think of global health, I think of health equity and addressing health disparities. I have always been someone who wanted to be in a role or having a focus that was really challenging the status quo in terms of how we provide healthcare and even conceptualize of health, and working both on a systems level and individual clinical care level to address disparities and also just to provide healthcare in ways that are more cost effective, more focused on outcomes and a patient's journey, and honoring kind of diverse socioeconomic, cultural, and other practices and circumstances.
When you were a med student, did you always know that you wanted to do global health, or how did that come about?
Great question. Global health actually, as a term, didn't exist when I was a med student. So I knew my undergrad was actually a dual major in anthropology and human biology. And so that laid the foundation for my understanding of how much culture and how much societal structures influence health and healthcare and wellness. And so then when I went to med school, I actually went on a poorly designed, you know, at the time it would have been called international health experience. Poorly designed in that I went to East Africa and I thought I was helping, but I actually ended up doing things clinically that I wasn't prepared to do. I ended up delaying diagnoses. I ended up hurting patients. And at that point, I realized that I had been really well intended. I thought I was doing something that was good and useful and helpful and was doing a service, when in reality, I was really morally distressed after it and realized that it was unethical, that it was not actually helping people. And if anything, it was perpetuating some of the root causes of differential power and privilege and disparities in our society, both health and otherwise. So a lot of my, I think, energy towards global health or focus on it is a reaction to the fact that that term and to activities that require international engagement have really had huge shortfalls. And in many ways, I think they're actually not aligned with health equity.
I think you kind of touched on already one of the biggest things I really wanted to talk about on this podcast was, what are the biggest red flags or things that students should definitely not partake in a global health or like international medicine trip? How do they know that going in? And then how often do students actually cause harm in global health settings instead of helping?
I think it starts with who you're partnering with to go abroad and what the premise is. I would say that if the website or the marketing or outreach that engaged you with an organization is telling you that you're going somewhere to change it in a short period of time, that I would be very suspect. I think that's a huge red flag. Global health, international medicine, and global engagement and development are kind of fraught with colonial dynamics, and particularly when it comes to clinical activities of students or professionals that are picking themselves up from one reality and going to another, are really fraught with problems, not only like directly harming patients, but also displacing or ignoring existing health systems that are often functioning much better under really difficult circumstances than what narratives by external stakeholders are telling you. So I would say number one is, you know, what does that website say that attracted you to this opportunity? And is it an egocentric sense of helping, saving, changing? Or is it more of a humility and admiration lens that you're taking? Because I think when we go abroad at any point in our career, particularly when we're training, we should really position ourselves as learners and admirers and not as change agents in the immediate sense. I actually did research on this because there is not good research that actually says that sending students abroad or even sending professionals abroad to do short-term clinical activities actually changes health outcomes or impacts health status in the places we go. And so I did a study to look at what are the real authentic impacts, because to me, this comes down to authenticity and to be having a really honest discussion and transparent discussion of what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we impact things. So when we looked at that, the benefits of students going from a high income setting like the US to a lower resource setting anywhere in the globe results in five kind of types of benefits. Number one is increased English proficiency for anyone we have contact with, which makes sense, and that can be a very useful skill set in terms of employability and engagement beyond a local setting. Number two is we increase the prestige of places where we go. So you walk into a hospital, clinic, or NGO, and you are actually increasing the prestige that that clinic, hospital, or NGO has for their wider community. So you better do your homework and make sure that you're walking into a place that is practicing standard of care and that is a place that deserves that prestige. Three is that by developing programs, particularly how CFHI does, where we have a formal leadership structure and networking structure locally and with our central office, we increase the networks that are built locally and the opportunity for folks to build leadership, network building, and so in that way, it can be a positive. The fourth is that we increase the movement of resources. So whether that is CFHI practices fair trade learning, so we compensate everyone who mentors and hosts, and we ensure that the resources you're using, whether it's gas in a car or food or other resources, is not further depleting an already low resource environment. So remuneration for all of that. In addition, students come with resources such as the ability to contribute to certain projects or to bring, you know, sometimes gloves that the student has and then they leave behind. Like, it can be simple things, but there is movement of resources, and we can, as outsiders, often be seen as strings to more resources in various ways. And then the fifth impact is that we increase the sense of global citizenship of local mentors and local community members who are teaching us and who come into contact with us. So in that way, you being somewhere else is actually increasing the sense of self-efficacy and the sense of reach that local people have, and that they're helping you, and thus they're contributing to the wider world. So it's really not about you helping them, which is often the construct that outside students or faculty are thinking through.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about global citizenship. I know CFHI puts a large emphasis on global citizenship, and actually when I went to college at NYU Shanghai, our school's motto was like, make the world your major, and CFHI is similar but different in let the world change you. So what does that actually mean? Like, what does it mean to be a global citizen?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I don't think there's one singular answer. I can give you my thoughts on it. So CFHI's motto, which actually attracted me to the organization 16 years ago, is let the world change you, as you mentioned. And someone suggested I reach out to CFHI. I had done global health education work in med school and residency, and I helped develop global health tracks and offices and residency certificates and things. And when they suggested I reach out to CFHI, I was like, oh, these organizations are a dime a dozen. Like, I'm not interested in them. They're not doing good work. And then I saw that tagline, let the world change you. And it really spoke to how I conceived of our journey towards being global citizens and towards global health expertise or practitioner status, in that you actually have to fully embrace being a learner and more of a what anthropology does, which is participant observation or ethnographic learning. So what does that mean in practice? It's a fancy word. What I think it means is not disrupting a reality, actually going into a reality and trying to not disrupt it and appreciate what the reality is in an untarnished, uninterrupted way, which means don't just do something, sit there. You know, we have to sit on our hands, because culturally, a lot of Americans, people from the U.S. and other cultures, we have a framework of going straight to action. We are task-oriented when you look at kind of cultural domains versus relationship-oriented. And so we often have a hard time just being and learning and observing a reality rather than trying to change it immediately or act in a way that's oftentimes not honoring the richness of understanding complex realities. So I think global citizenship means being able to sit on your hands and learn and really go from the positionality of critic or positionality of like problem solver or position of trying to confirm our generalizations or our worldview, and really having an open mindset that, and a humble mindset that, in actuality, we don't understand a lot of things that we think we understand. And only when you're in a place and you're in that mindset of being a sponge, I think, can you even start to get an authentic version of reality. So I think that's where global citizenship comes in. I think also there's obviously a civic engagement piece to that. There's a world orientation piece. But at its core, you will never reach that if you are coming in with a sense of hubris.
Great, thank you. You have had a career in global health, and I've had somewhat of a background in global health before medical school, and I just kind of want to share with my fellow medical students some basics of global health and how it's possible to have an actual career that's ethical and engaging. So one of the things I've always been excited about global health is a future career, but I've had time to take the reflecting and thinking of, okay, what could that actually look like? And for me, the first thing that used to come to mind is those short-term medical mini medical trips that we've been talking about. And I think that is what a lot of medical students do think about. So what are those real ethical considerations that need to be top of mind when engaging in global health work? And how does that fit or not fit with short-term trips that we've kind of touched on, but just more explicit for people who
don't think about global health or haven't really been exposed to global health before?
Yeah. So I think it's both an ethical and ethos construct, but I also think it's a tangible logistical concept as well. And I don't think you can separate those very cleanly. From an ethics standpoint, there are certain ethical principles and values that kind of underlie global health. So things like humility, respect, transparency, solidarity, accountability, sustainability. And then you have kind of the traditional biomedical ethical principles like distributive justice and autonomy and maleficence and beneficence. And, you know, I think those values are also come to bear on logistical situations. So let's think of, you know, non-malfeasance or beneficence, like, so that, you know, first do no harm.
I was going to say, first, for people who don't remember what those are, yeah. Can you shed some light?
So first do no harm, and then beneficence is that our actions should actually have a positive impact and a benefit. So if you think about short-term clinical activities in other countries, that's not necessarily actually true of what happens. And the reason is because when we are trained in a US system framework in terms of diagnostics and treatment modalities and cultural norms, both cultural norms within the health system, but also the wider culture of the geographies that we're living in, we are not necessarily as prepared as one might think to pick ourselves up and transplant ourselves to another health system, whether that's in a high-income reality or a low-income reality. And oftentimes, students are thinking like, yeah, I want to go to Kenya and practice medicine, or I want to go to South Africa or Namibia or Bolivia or Ecuador or India or wherever. And that seems like a really easy thing to do. And it's just like, oh yeah, I'll just go there and I'll be helpful and I'll take care of patients. In reality, the ways that diseases present, the ways that health systems are organized, the way that diagnostic tools are used, the way that treatments are used, including pharmaceuticals, but other treatments, is very different. And if you think that you're going to like solve health inequities by doing that, I would really challenge you. That number one, you're not as prepared as you might think clinically to actually have the same expertise you have in your US-centered system or job or training role. And two, that the whole premise of uprooting a doctor or a med student and putting them down in a low and middle income country is actually not a solution to human resources for health crises or disparities. It's not a solution in terms of within a week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks, you are not able to have the longitudinal relationship or the continuity of care that one really needs to have impacts. And you're by definition not sustainable because you're going to then pick yourself up and leave. Okay. So when is it okay? Let's say that. So number one, I never practice clinically abroad. So I'll just put that out there. I do capacity building, which is basically training and building up resources in health systems, both in our own backyard and around the world. I collaborate on research. I collaborate on education. As you know, at CFHI, we enable students to go abroad and embed themselves in existing health systems. So I do global health in those facets, but I do not practice clinically because I know that I'm not the best prepared to practice clinically in low resource settings or even high resource settings. Like, I wouldn't pick myself up and go to Spain or go to the UK or like Italy or other high income countries and expect that I could just walk into a hospital and start practicing. Okay. But many students and faculty do that and think that that's just fine in poor environments. And I think that's because we have a differential treatment for the poor. I think it demonstrates prejudice, racism, and a lot of unconscious bias that we hold, and just that we think that that's a really good idea and solution. So I think number one, the logistical principle of doing that doesn't lead to better health outcomes, and it's disruptive. Like I said, like if we're doing that, we're actually often disrupting systems that already exist. Our medical director in Ecuador like laughs because she tells a story that she's in primary care and her patients will bring her these like Ziploc bags of a bunch of different pills, you know, and they'll be like, "Doctora, should I take these?" And she's like, "Where'd you get those?" And they're like, "Oh, the Americans that set up the clinic at the school, you know, gave them to me and told me to take them." And she's like looking at this like, "Oh my gosh, what? We don't even know what these are." And like, "No, don't take them." I mean, there is a drug supply chain in every corner of this world and essential medications for each country and regions. And duffel bag medicine, which is kind of a term that people use that are not in support of short-term clinical activities and taking meds and throwing them in a suitcase and bringing them somewhere else. The reason that I think that's really problematic is not just the logistical and the ethical, but also the opportunity costs. So for those of you who don't you know, think about opportunity costs as a concept very often, it comes out of business. And it's basically, what are you giving up or not focusing on or doing if you're doing something else? So if you are seeing yourself as a solution by doing short-term clinical work for a few weeks or a month in a low-resource setting, what solutions are you bypassing or ignoring or not learning about or not engaging with? And I think that a lot of the things that we are ignoring or not doing when we're spending time doing those short-term parachute-in activities are the real solutions. So, and the real solutions don't pat us on the back. And those short-term pop-up activities, often there's a big sense of like patting yourself on the back. Like, we saw 500 patients in 3 days, and we did all that. We handed out these meds, and we did this and that. We checked blood pressures. And it's like, yeah, you get feedback from that, and you get to pat yourself on the back. But ultimately, that is not actually evidence-based, and you could actually be harming patients inadvertently, which gets us back to those ethical principles that are not aligned with our profession.
I actually want to harp on the harmful part a little bit more, because I think people are like, oh, well, I just won't make a difference, but I won't necessarily hurt anybody by going. And I know that for the CFHI pre-departure training, you have to do a lot of reading on bad things that have happened because of medical students. Could you kind of share with the audience some of those things and stories that have happened that are actually harmful?
So CFHI programs ensure that trainees are embedded in health systems, but in a way where they are not practicing outside their scope of training or even put in the position of being the primary clinician or the decision maker. You're always deferring to the local healthcare workforce. But on other poorly designed programs or students, you know, Noelle Sullivan's work out of Northwestern University has actually shown that students purposefully go around rules and regulations to get hands-on clinical care, both med students and pre-med students, even when they know that they're not supposed to. So she did a study based in Tanzania where there was a OBGYN who would not allow the students to deliver babies. And when that OBGYN would leave the hospital for the day, the students would actually text each other and be like, she's gone, and they would go. And the nurses would not feel empowered to put the same regulations around the students. And so what's happened? Well, students have pulled on breech babies, which actually leads to asphyxia and death. Students have misdiagnosed patients with malaria, over 100 patients, and not diagnosing it because they were put in charge of reading slides and they didn't do it properly. Students have handed out medications with no follow-up or understanding of the adverse events. Students have prescribed medications for 100 times the actual dose of a medicine and harmed patients. And one patient was told to take too much insulin by a student and had hypoglycemia and died. These are not CFHI programs because we try to prevent that by the structure of our program, but there is real harm that happens. And it's not just students, it's also faculty members and fully licensed professionals. So our other research is in the realm of professionals going abroad, and we found that over 60% are asked to practice outside their scope of training, and of those 60%, 50% say yes. And so they're doing things they are not actually trained or equipped to do, which is obviously not the goal of health equity and not the goal of having folks go abroad to do things. So yeah, there's real harms, and those are the harms to patients, but then there's also harms, I think, in terms of the spirit of it. I think that the spirit of those activities and that unauthentic, untransparent, irresponsible approach is actually super colonial and racist and perpetuates uninformed perspectives on low-resource environments, because many low-resource settings are doing amazing things with very little, much more cost-effective. Many low-resource environments have aspects of universal healthcare, have cut child mortality, maternal mortality through evidence-based approaches, have integrated public health and clinical care way beyond what we've done in the U.S., have integrated social determinants of health into care much more effectively. So by jumping in and being a poorly designed Band-Aid, the spirit of that is also not fully respecting and admiring what places that look very different than you're used to are actually doing in ways that the U.S. has a lot to learn from.
I think you've really encapsulated the harm you can do to the communities, too. And I think you're also doing your own psychological harm to yourself if you're going beyond your scope and doing things that are harmful, because anybody who makes a mistake knows that that sits with you. And if you made a mistake which was preventable because you shouldn't have been doing that in the first place, I think that that probably harms your psyche even more, at least in my uninformed, non-studied opinion.
I totally agree with you, and I also think there's this unfortunate dynamic where until you're further along in your career and you actually are practicing and learn what standard of care is and what's necessary to move the needle in terms of health metrics, whether for individuals or populations, you don't know what you don't know, and it's not until later in your career when you are actually taking care of patients and realize how hard it is to do appropriate health systems work or clinical care delivery. It's not till later that you actually realize that what you did earlier was so problematic, because you don't have enough knowledge. And what you'll often see, particularly when you're going with an organization that is perpetuating a narrative that there's like, there's nothing going on, so you need to go save this place in a short period of time, you will actually see nothing, because the health system looks different, the way it's delivered. You will just see, you'll see absence of solutions that actually exist, and it'll reinforce the stereotype that there's nothing happening and that you need to jump in and do it. And it's not until later on in your career where you can actually appreciate the harms, the limitations of thinking that and of perpetuating that and of organizations perpetuating it in order to increase volunteers or in order to make money or in order to bolster engagement in certain ways.
How did you kind of wrestle with that afterwards? Because you said that you partook in some of those medical international trips. How did you reckon with that in your career and not really just dwell on things that may have happened? I've done short-term trips in the past too, not in medical school, but in high school, and just kind of thinking about like, what did I actually do there, and how has that kind of informed my career? I think it's really important to think about. So I just want to hear how you've done that.
Well, I mean, I dedicated a chunk of my career to exposing this and to putting research behind the different pieces of the theory of change, of how this can evolve and be different, and to working with like CFHI to build up options for schools and for students that are authentic and have an appropriate ethos. So that was a big thing, right? I also stopped doing clinical work abroad. I do think there are successful approaches to doing clinical care abroad. I just think that it has to be under very specific circumstances, oftentimes over much longer periods of time. So there are health systems that rely on outsiders who come for years. And so sometimes I think there are structures that it could be okay, but I don't think it's a mainstream solution in short-term chunks. Also, not for clinical care, but for even any projects internationally, if you only have short periods of time to actually physically go or to participate, you have to think about like a beads on a string approach. So you are one bead on a string and orienting yourself to a team effort rather than trying to single-handedly be a solution, I think is really important. So I think my work through CFHI and through advocacy and research stems from my distress and still guilt that I hold of falling for that, an ill-informed model, and falling for unauthentic global health, and falling for a narrative that perpetuated colonial dynamics and judgments. And so hopefully through the work I'm doing, students don't have to, you know, there used to be, when I talked, so I've been doing this for 20 years, when I talked about this a decade ago at meetings, I'm at a conference right now and you're talking at a conference, when I would talk about it, people would say, well, yeah, but students have to go and just learn, like, you know, you have to mess up in order to learn, and you have to do these things, it's a learning process. So students mess up, they harm patients, it's part of the learning process. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, you don't actually have to go and mess up in order to learn global health. Like, you could actually, we have enough understanding of what global health even is and what solutions are for health inequities and health system challenges, that individual students as pre-meds or as med students or residents don't need to go and mess up in order to learn these lessons. That's not okay. And Now I don't hear that as much. So I think it's working. Like, I think people are getting the memo that you can't just set up things to fail so that people from the outside can learn. It's not okay.
Yeah, I agree. That brings me a little bit to my last question, which is I actually had the opportunity to participate in CFHI's Ecuador program, Global Health and Ecuador Rotation in Guayaquil and Puyo, focus on rural and urban health. And I have been super interested in health systems in general, and I appreciated the opportunities in this rotation to really investigate and learn about Ecuador's health system by working in rural health clinics, visiting indigenous communities, and participating in vector control efforts and rotating through an urban hospital. I learned a lot about health system, my approach having the right to health care, which was recognized in their constitution in 2008. Kind of talked about like how different health systems exist and are really successful. And if some listeners are considering a global health rotation, I would highly recommend CFHI because of their focus on ethics that we've kind of been talking about and coming back to in this conversation. So what are some of those biggest things that CFHI does to ensure they're having an ethical impact?
Sure. So I think some of the fundamental approaches that are key to CFHI's programs is that, number one, we only partner with existing health systems and longitudinal organizations that are locally led and locally run. I think you were talking about red flags earlier. I think another red flag is like anything that you create for a short period of time that's not always there when you're not there. I would highly caution against that because you're already creating this somewhat of a fabricated reality by doing that. So we only partner with existing health systems that are longitudinal, or NGOs or organizations that are doing public health in a longitudinal, locally led way. And while students can have impacts, those impacts are not through delivering direct clinical care because of all the reasons we talked about. So I think immersing students in the clinical care and participating in dialogues around differential diagnosis and looking at, you know, diagnostics, x-rays, thinking about essential medications and how, you know, treatment protocols for a variety of communicable and non-communicable diseases, and kind of participating without having an undue central role in the clinical decision making is really important. We have long-term partnerships that are accountable. So CFHI is over 30 years old, and many of our partnerships have been over 15, 20 years. I mean, really long periods of time. So we've been able to overcome a lot of the colonial dynamics. Those dynamics are not just coming from the U.S. person who's going abroad. Those dynamics are also nurtured by local stakeholders who are used to a colonial legacy and will often favor outsiders and over trust and over impart greater abilities for outsiders than they actually have. So through these longitudinal partnerships over decades, we're able to kind of deconstruct that colonial dynamic and give local leaders and local community members the status that they deserve in terms of being experts of their own environment, experts of their health system, so that the incoming student or faculty is not put in the position of being an expert in someone else's reality. Other things we do, so we do a really comprehensive pre-departure training. It includes the Pillars of Global Health course, which is an 8-part asynchronous course that covers everything from discourses and definitions in global health, to health systems, to global burden of disease, to cross-cultural effectiveness and adaptability. So I think that course, combined with our pre-departure safety and security training and just emphasis on the ethics and connecting how you behave and the safety of patients around you and how you're acting to the greater movement of global health and health equity, is really fundamental. We also have a lot of debriefing structures. So it's not like it never happens that a student acts outside their scope of training on CFHI programs. It does happen from time to time, but it is not the assumed role, and we debrief it and we work through how did that happen, how can we prevent it in the future, where are the gaps in our framework or our operations or the way we're preparing students. Also, we partner with over 100 universities, and we spend a lot of time in that partnership process getting value alignment. So schools will come to us with a kind of colonial, non-contemporary mindset around their faculty or their students going abroad. And so we use that period of developing a collaboration to really get on the same page and to educate stakeholders at universities of why the programs are structured as they are and how it's really important to have fidelity to the global health movement. And so I think that's time well spent, because then the universities get more on the same page and their faculty and their administrators and leaders change their tune as well. So yeah, I think, and in our research and thought leadership too, like, we're not just interested in students going on CFHI programs, although I do invite you to check out our website, www.cfhi.org. But we also, because our mission is three-part, and the second parts are thought leadership and research, you know, I strongly believe in, like, a rising tide rises all ships. So, like, as CFHI pushes ourselves to do better, and we always can, we're also setting a standard for other organizations and for universities and how they behave abroad.
Thank you so much. I was about to ask if you had any concluding remarks, or I guess for your concluding remarks, what are the biggest things people should think about if they want to do global health in their career as medical students?
Sure. So think about stepping stones. Appreciate that there's some psychological pitfalls that our minds do. And so one of them is called the oversimplification cause fallacy. So, and that's a lot of words, but it's basically our mind's tendency to oversimplify problems and solutions in really complex situations. And that's because our minds have a hard time wrapping themselves around complex situations. And we want to often help or fix things. So we have to boil it down to a simple cause and effect. So if you go into global environments knowing that your mind's going to do that, and that you have to intentionally counteract it with frameworks and ways of setting up that engagement and also challenging yourself in the moment, I think it can really help, because then you're like, oh, I know my mind is going to try to oversimplify the cause and the solution. I know that organizations exist and there's a cultural inertia, being from the US, that we are superior and that we can bring to other parts of the world things that they need. And there are things that we can bring to the rest of the world, but it's only through a stepping stone process where we really start from a position of humble learner and of recognizing our limitations stronger than we recognize our abilities.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you have any comments, questions, or episode suggestions, please email us at oumpodcast@cusm.org. That's oumpodcast@cusm.org. Thanks.